Bright light city, gonna set my soul.
I love Gary's got this look on his face like we should understand why this is going. Well, I think I know why, actually. It might be because Jeff and I have just returned from Las Vegas.
Have we?
You have.
It's been a week.
It has, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Gadget Grill, everyone.
It's good to be back.
Indeed. Welcome to the Gadget Grill. See what happens when you don't prepare, guys.
Speaking of
who exactly?
To me, actually.
Every time we don't prepare, this is what happens to Gary.
Yeah. No. I had trouble with a little bit of content that wasn't quite where I wanted it to be, and I had to move it around, and that meant changing a couple of things on there.
This sounds like the kind of thing that Netflix is going after people for now.
Indeed.
We're not in the news yet.
Indeed. Welcome to the Gadget Grill, everybody.
We should doubly welcome.
Yeah, we have. I guess we've got a show that we should be doing, haven't we? Professor Stumpy Steamboat Gaz.
I'm Jason Murray, and I didn't prepare anything.
I'm Jeff Quattromani.
Nobody puts D in the corner. She's actually like halfway along the wall. She's not in the corner.
Yeah. Indeed she is. So welcome back to the world, guys. Yeah. To reality.
Mm.
You've both been travelling around the world. Jeff, you've only been to America. Jason, you've well and truly been around the world, haven't you?
I did actually circumnavigate the globe.
Indeed. Was that good for you?
It was a lot of time on planes.
That's the trouble with flying. You end up spending a lot of time on planes.
Mm-hmm.
And, Jeff, you had a little bit of entertainment on your flight out of Sydney, from what I understand.
There is always entertainment on a flight. I mean, depending on who you're sitting with or who's behind you or in front of you. My flight back, for example, was with a toddler behind me and a toddler in front of me.
Oh, lucky you.
And honeymoon is to my left.
Oh, my God. Did they get a room?
No, but asking them to move when I needed to go to the bathroom was really difficult.
You had a window seat, did you?
I had the window seat, so I could sleep.
That's why I never get the window seat, because I've got to climb over people, and I don't like climbing over people.
I always go for the aisle seat myself, personally. I was actually very, very distressed. I got a flight recently, and I think it was my flight to Melbourne, and I was in the middle of the aisle. I was like, oh, my God, what am I going to do for an hour? It was only for an hour flight, but I still freak out.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other things about getting the aisle seat, of course, is that you get a little bit extra leg room because you can
Trip people over.
You can trip people over, and that's always a lot of fun. Of course, when they run over you with the food service trolleys, that's a different story altogether.
Every time. Like, I fall asleep, and inevitably my head just, like, lists out into the aisle, and then wham, they come past at the thing. Oh, sorry, sir.
Oh, no, I didn't get that. No, I have this amazing...
Well, of course you don't, because you're sitting next to the window. And when you're flying from Los Angeles to Sydney, or from Sydney to Los Angeles, as you have done over the last 2 weeks, tell me exactly what you see when you're looking out the window.
Nothing, because they told me to shut it.
Right. And the point of getting the window seat was?
So I can lean on it and sleep.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. And it works like a charm.
Okay, so you lean and
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will allow that one. Jason, how about you?
The weirdest thing that I've seen?
That's a tough question.
On a plane? I don't know.
Was that the question? I don't remember.
I don't think it was. He's just answering his own question.
Well, that's right. Jason's usually...
Sorry, I was still Googling that weirdest thing scene that we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
Indeed.
Is it possible that the listeners are noticing how dusty we are back at this year? I mean, this is our first show together for 2016.
It is indeed.
It is noticeable.
Yeah. Now, of course, last Monday morning, we woke to some very, very sad news.
I was still flying.
You were still flying? Mm-hmm. Yes, you were. You missed that.
When were you back?
I got back on Monday.
I landed to sad news.
Yes.
You landed to the sad news. The sad news being the passing of David Bowie.
Ground control to Major Tom. ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control.
Welcome back to the Gadget Grill onto RDJ FM 88.1 on the FM band, on the internet at www.radio2rdj.com. What's the matter, Jason?
Jason's waving his arms.
I'm surprised the finger did not turn on either of us to bring us back from the ad break.
Oh, see what happens when you spend a couple of weeks away from the show.
It's taking things, over. That's it.
Things. Yeah. It's a conspiracy. I'm taking over the show. Hang on.
Yeah. Wait a second.
Had to happen sooner or later.
I know. I've got a really good story to lead us into the news today, though.
All right.
Okay. How about in Queensland, a company called AllGrid Energy? They're Indigenous Australians, and they're developing solar energy technology. They've got a $12,000 system called WattGrid that allows households to store power produced by their solar panels during the day, because there's not much sun at night, for use in the evening. In combination with a 3-kilowatt solar panel array, the WattGrid can offer an average of 12 kilowatts per day, or about half of the average daily household, combined with an array of up to 7 kilowatts to provide even more.
So you said this is a $12,000 kit.
$12,000 kit.
That's
yeah.
much cheaper than most solar energy.
This is. I presume this is just the battery side of things, not the actual solar array.
Yeah. Okay.
But even so, this is wonderful. And they've got another product called PortaGrid, which is a portable solar power solution.
So that first one that you mentioned is very similar to Powerwall.
Exactly.
So Tesla's bringing a similar system to that.
They're taking on Powerwall, and they reckon it's costing about 30% less.
Well, hard to say, because we don't know the price of the Powerwall in Australia yet.
I know.
But I mean, it's good. I think it's... And there's other companies that are doing similar battery installations as well, which are harvesting this energy so you can use them in the evening.
Correct.
And I think it's a great idea. If I had solar panels, it makes sense to have the battery with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jason, you said you had no news.
No, I do. No. I've got news.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say it was good news.
Yeah, well, you know, it can be good news as well. Actually, I have a few things about self-driving cars.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about self-driving cars?
I don't.
Do not stop.
So everyone had. Well, no, they have to stop if they see something.
All right.
Everyone had a lot of self-driving. Well, I say everyone. There were a lot of self-driving cars at CES.
Yep.
Yes.
None of them were actually moving. They were all actually stationary for self-driving.
They were self-non-driving cars. But,
there were a lot of them. It seems like every car company is moving into self-driving cars.
Mm.
We heard a lot of different estimates about when self-driving cars or autonomous vehicles will be in the market. And, Jeff, you and I were talking before the show about how the definition of an autonomous car differs depending on who you ask. So it's kind of difficult to tell when we're actually going to see autonomous vehicles hit the road. But there was an estimate at CES that it'll probably be about 2050 before fully autonomous vehicles come out there. I kind of wonder if a few vehicle manufacturers might try to might try to get in there a little bit earlier than that.
Again, it does come down to that definition.
It does. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But there was, coming on that definition, Lyft and General Motors this week announced that they're actually going to be piloting self-driving cars as rideshare vehicles in Austin, Texas. Now, they're going to be restricted to a downtown loop, so as long as you want to go somewhere on that loop, it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be moving at a maximum of 30 miles per hour. Now, I assume that these cars are still going to be actually driven.
People.
They'll have someone actually
someone
driving
in control,
them,
yeah.
Just in case. But
you think so, right?
And I saw something during the week that said, I think it was in South Australia, they're going to start their first trials of self-driving cars as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening in that realm.
Yeah, so Tesla brought out its autopilot functionality, and apparently they've been using some of that in South Australia as well. So
right.
I wonder if the two are related there.
Probably.
The other self-driving car news that I heard this week is that the US Department of Transport wants to expedite the rollout of self-driving tech. So presumably they're going to start lowering the barriers in terms of legislation to actually get those cars on the road.
And, well, the new Mercedes E-Class that was paraded at the American Motor Show in Detroit this week has got a lot of autonomous technology in it as well.
Mm.
Now, that's not necessarily all going to be enabled when the car gets released later this year, but Mercedes are certainly going well ahead with that. BMW are certainly going ahead with autonomous or self-driving vehicles as well. So it is all happening. And, of course, I was reminded by a tweet that I saw earlier this week, and I mentioned this at dinner this evening, about 10, 15 years ago, we used to see memes pop up about how if tech companies manufactured cars, there'd be all sorts of different things, and it went through how bad the car would be if it was manufactured by a tech company. Well, we have Google, Apple, quite a few tech companies now looking at manufacturing cars. So
we can
expect the cars to the operating system on the cars to crash, what, every half hour or something, I guess?
As long as it's only the operating system and not the car.
Well,
that's all right, right?
Well, then again, we've got to think in terms of flying, and a lot of the planes have got automated operating systems. You think in terms of the flights that you guys took back from America and took to America, probably 95% of that flight was carried out under autopilot.
I saw an interesting presentation from, not so much a presentation, but on Panasonic's stand at CES. They actually had a sort of a looping presentation going that they actually have a lot of real-time weather detection systems that can detect weather conditions across the globe, send them out to airlines and to air traffic control systems so that they can actually ensure a smoother ride for the people in planes by routing them around that,
absolutely.
That inclement weather.
That's quite cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Jeff, someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
So, Netflix.
Mm.
Jason, you alluded to a little bit at the beginning of the show. There's some news from Netflix this week that if you do use a VPN to...
There was some news from Netflix last week. Did we talk about that?
No, because you weren't here.
Mm.
Yeah. So let's get...
Let's do this one first.
Let's do mine, and then you can interrupt with yours. So the...
They are related.
So the story from Netflix this week is that if you use a VPN to get access to overseas content, whether it's UK or US or Bulgaria, they'll be cutting off that avenue for you.
Right.
So you'll be getting your local content as you should be getting from soon, as in like the next couple of weeks, you'll start noticing this stuff happening.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see the number of people who now go to smaller VPN companies to try to get a working VPN in place.
Yeah, I almost feel like this is something that's really hard to police.
It is. It's a cat and mouse game.
Yeah. Right.
There's a reason they haven't gone after it before.
Yep.
The other Netflix news, of course, from the last couple of weeks was from CES, where they announced that under the hashtag of Netflix Everywhere, they are now available... Everywhere on the planet, with a few exceptions. They're actually available in about 190 countries on the planet. They're not in China, and they're also not in North Korea.
Right.
Because of US company restrictions on exports.
Forbes magazine, Forbes.com, have been forcing visitors to their website to disable the ad blockers if they want to read.
I've run foul of this.
If they want to read its content. And so visitors are told they must disable the ad blocker if they want to see the Forbes content. And because of this, what's happened? People have started to get malware distributed by the ads on the Forbes site installed on their computers.
Fantastic. Thanks, Forbes.
Isn't that wonderful?
So I clicked through to a Forbes article last week, and the first time I clicked through it showed me it. The second time, it said, hey, we've noticed that you've been looking at a few articles and you've got ad block turned on. Would really appreciate you turning it off. And I went, no. And I clicked the next, and it was like, it looks like you've still got ad block on.
Correct, yes.
Could you please turn it off? And I'm like, fine. And I added an exception for Forbes.com, looked at the article, and then immediately put it back in.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you're going to have an ad if you're going to force people to not have ad blockers, don't serve up malware.
Yeah, it's probably a good, you know, just good advice for everyone, really.
Yeah. Jeff.
So Skype have, and this isn't entirely new, but they've actually expanded on this a little bit. So Skype has obviously got translating services within their application now.
Yes.
So, and they've been in beta mode for a little bit in actually using this software, but now you can do 7 languages voice-to-voice for translation. So Chinese, Mandarin, English, French, German, Italian, Portuguese, and Spanish. And that's, to me, super impressive that you can have a conversation with someone, you know, who's doesn't speak any
doesn't
English,
speak your language.
And they'll understand you, and you'll understand them, figuratively.
Okay, I'll believe that one when I see it.
We should actually try. I've never actually had an opportunity to test Skype's real-time translation. I'd really like to.
We should do that live on the show one day.
Do we know anyone who speaks fluent of any of those languages?
I could actually find somebody.
I have ready access to many people who speak those languages.
Well, we've got to get to it.
Okay. Last story for the night, guys. Ransomware. We all know what ransomware is.
More malware, yep.
Oh, yeah. We're on the malware kick this week. Ransomware is malware that infects your computer, encrypts your files, and then the person who has infected your computer contacts you and says, if you want to unencrypt your files, send me $50, $100, $1,000, whatever. Give me your wallet.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we know, there's a lot of script kiddies around. People who don't really know what they're doing, and they'll find something and they'll play with it and send out malware or whatever, or try and hack into your site.
I think I might like where this is going.
Oh, you will like where this is going, because someone that's described in this article as a cyber criminal, but I'm not quite sure, but somebody has built a ransomware program built based upon proof of concept code that was released online, but they messed up the implementation. The result is that the victim's files have been totally unrecoverable.
I don't really like where this went.
No. So they have
I thought it was going to go for a hilarious thing where, like, the cyber criminal encrypted his own hard drive.
No, it wasn't. That would have been funny.
I know, right?
Not quite that good, no. But Trend Micro have spotted this one, and they analysed the program's code and found that it was a modification of a proof-of-concept file encryptor application called Hidden Tier that was published on GitHub in August. And the Hidden Tier code comes with a disclaimer that the code may only be used for education purposes and a warning that people using it as ransomware could go to jail. And away you go. So this person has done it and trying to extract ransom from people whose computers he's infected, and he can't decrypt it.
I wonder if...
Love it.
I wonder if that would have happened if they didn't put the disclaimer in there.
Probably. Probably. Okay. To the music, guys. And my very favourite piece of music by David Bowie was actually a duet that he did with a guy by the name of Sir Michael Jagger. And I believe that you've probably heard of Sir Michael Keith Jagger.
I have.
That's good. Jason, you've heard of him as well?
I have. I didn't realise this was a test.
Oh, it always is.
When it comes to music, it is always a test. And so this is David Bowie and Mick Jagger and Dancing in the Street.
South America, France, UK.
And we're back with the Gadget Grill on Radio 2RDJ 88.1 FM and on the internet at www.radio2rdj.com.
It takes a bit of thinking to get back into remembering what it is you got to say, doesn't it?
Not even scripted.
No, and it's there on the wall.
And it's written on the wall.
Indeed it is. That's the writing on the wall for you guys.
Yes. It's kind of on a window.
Yeah, well, near enough. You know, what can I say? What can I say? What I can say is actually this, that in another week, school is going to be back. Can you believe that?
Oh, we're going back?
We're going back to school.
We really should.
We should probably go back to school. We intros.
So when is that? Sorry, next week?
Week's time.
That means that traffic will be back.
Yes. Traffic goes back to being hell after the Australia Day holiday. So for those listening on the Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, for those of us listening to us right now, just a couple more days. So, yeah. Now, of course, a lot of parents out there, a lot of people, are going to be buying computers, laptops, technology devices for their children to go to school.
Happens every year. It's a massive market.
But it's now very much a bring-your-own-devices market. It's very much a buy-your-own-devices market today, as opposed to a few years ago when the government supplied all the all the kids with laptops.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity during this week to speak with a lady by the name of Pip Cleves, and she's done some research into bring-your-own-devices, and I thought that we should have a listen to what she had to say.
I have Pip Cleves on the phone with me today. And Pip, I'm led to believe that you're the parent and senior education consultant at Design, Learn and Empower. That's quite a mouthful. What actually does it all mean?
I support schools to integrate technology and to provide learning experiences that are preparing our students for their future. So it's an education focus. And I just happen to be a parent on the side.
What we're talking about today is, in a couple of weeks' time, we've got school starting again, and bring your own devices is really quite a big thing, as well as, you know, beyond what a lot of people would be familiar with in the office, but it's now starting to make its way into the school, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think there's quite a few schools looking this towards BYOD as an option to get devices in students' hands and getting our students ready for the future that's coming ahead for them.
Now, you've done some research on this, and what did you look at in the research, first of all?
So some of the things that I've found in the research, so Microsoft commissioned some research with around about 1,000 parents, and we found out that about 1 in 4 parents are purchasing the wrong device to start with, and they have to go back and find something different. We're learning about half of our parents are still in the dark as to what they need to purchase. So they're looking for guidance from schools so that they make a purchase that makes sense. And interesting, we're finding that about 86% of parents indicated that they're willing to spend up to $1,000 for a device. So if we think about that much money being spent and yet one in four making purchases that are a little bit not going to help their students to learn in the best way they can, then, you know, we've still got a little bit of work to work with parents and ensure that they're ready when it's time to go and purchase a device for their students.
One thing that you've said there kind of worries me a little bit and it's been a long time since I've been involved with schools, but while schools can give some advice as to what a suitable device would be, I'm not sure that they're the best qualified person to speak to, or the best qualified organisation to speak to that. And similarly, of course, because the salespeople have got a vested interest in this, they are probably not the best person to give a parent independent advice either. Seems like it's a rather interesting problem there.
I think it is. In my experience of working with schools, the schools that are communicating closely with parents and making decisions with parents about any sort of BYOD program are the ones that are moving successfully. And it is like, so if I wasn't an educator, I wouldn't know what sort of device my children needed to use in year 10 at school. Because when I went to school, I didn't have devices at my fingertips. It was a paper-based classroom back then. So a lot of the parents who have teenage children, and young children too, don't get me wrong there, we don't have that experience ourselves. So we do need advice from someone. So there is a fantastic, Microsoft and Intel have created a website called devicesforschools.com.au, and on that website we can really start to build our knowledge as parents who make the decisions about what sort of device we should buy our children.
I'm presuming, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that we're talking mainly tablets and laptop type devices. I don't think that phones are really all that suitable within the classroom, except of course for goofing off when the teacher's not looking.
There's some great things we can do with phones. We can do some quick quizzes to tap in where students are, where their knowledge is at, and some basic stuff. But I think a 10 inches and above screen is where we're at, or 11 inches and above is a really important thing to look for in a device. And sometimes that can be in what we call a two-in-one form. And a two-in-one form is a tablet that has a keyboard attached to it. So we've got some now where you can pull apart. That's called a two-in-one. So what we've got to do is step back before we make any decision and step back and think, now, what sort of a learner is my child? So if they're going to be more of an academic style of learner, they're probably going to need a really good keyboard and a laptop in order to do their summaries, their essay writing, their note-taking. A two-in-one with a pen will allow them to do some writing on the screen, some kind of highlighting notes that are on a screen using the pen. So that's really good. If we've got creative students, so students that love hanging out in Photoshop and creating really, you know, beautiful movies and things like that, you're going to want a laptop that's got quite a strong processing capabilities and that have the allow them to use keyboards for that creation. And then if you have, let's call them a budding IT geek, then they're going to want to have a really good computer that they can do their gaming on, that they can do their coding on, that they can, you know, really get in and hone their computer study skills so that they're getting prepared for the future that they're going to move towards. So those three types of learners we need to look at are the academic, the creative, and the technical learners, as we call them.
Having a physical keyboard is probably a good place to start working with, and if you're doing creative stuff, then having the pen as an add-on is probably the way to go.
Yeah, a lot of the Adobe industry software will sort of need you to have that keyboard. It's moving towards the touch-only interface, so I think in all three cases that keyboard's good. The creative kids really do like that touch screen and a pen to work with those. So, you know, that's, you know, all areas to think about before we make purchases. I know my daughter always, you know, she approaches me and says, Mom, all my friends have got this device. Can I have that one? But no, you can't. I'm the parent and I'm going to make the decision Just like I choose which school shoes. You'll tell me which school shoes you want. But in the end, you know, it's me that has a budget and me that makes the decision. So I see computer purchases as the same. It should be a parent decision, not a child decision. If you've got a laptop at home that's, you know, been sitting around for a while, the new Windows 10 update will refresh that really nicely. When your most schools these days, through Office 365 agreements, students get the full Office software for free, so you don't need to purchase any software. And if you're in a New South Wales department school, you'll get Adobe software for free as well. So if you do have, a laptop that's got a decent-ish battery and you refurbish it with Windows 10, which is a free upgrade, put the free Office on it, which is available through school systems, and the Adobe, you've got yourself a really decent device to get your student going, your child going at that point.
That's absolutely wonderful advice, Pip. Thank you very much. That was Pip Cleaves, who is the Parent and Senior Education Consultant at Design, Learn and Empower. And thank you very much for talking to us today on the Gadget Grill.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Pip. Bye.
Yes, indeed. That was Pip Cleaves. And some very good advice there. What I thought was interesting was that I, in the interview, had dismissed the use of a phone within the class, and she came back with a couple of what I thought were very good use cases for having the phone, you know, give them instant quizzes and stuff like that on the phone, which gets the students engaged on their phone within the class. I think that's wonderful stuff.
Can the teacher, like, you know, find the kids who are acting up, and can she SMS them a quiz that they have to fill in?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that one, Jason.
But that really is the whole point here, is that, yes, you've got kids are bringing phones to school regardless. Mm. The school has a choice of either trying to go against that or embrace it and actually have them use it for school purposes, and that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, a little bit of Australian music now. This is Tender Love Song. Dee knows what I'm going to play. Captain Matchbox, Whoopee Band.
Mr. Pressman, here's some news. You can print it if you choose, just to show that times have changed a lot. Though it may sound strange to you, it is absolutely true. You can believe it or not. Since making Whoopee became all the rage, has even got into the old birdcage. My canary has circles under its eyes. Under his eyes, he used to whistle a prisoner's song. Now he just snickers the whole day long. My canary has circles under his eyes. His only pals are the meadowlark.
All right, anyone can start. Welcome back to the Gadget Grill, everyone, where we have discussions over who's going to start while we're in the ad break as Gary turns the microphones on.
Indeed.
This only happens on 88.1 FM and on radio2rdj.com.
And yes, and you guys, as we noted at the start of the show, have just returned from the computer. The Consumer
Electronics Show. Ooh, we can't get that wrong. The Consumer Technology Association even changed their name in the lead up to CES.
Right.
They used to be the Consumer Electronics Association, but now they have more technology companies rather than electronics. So okay. They decided to change their name.
Okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to let you two guys talk amongst yourselves for the next 4 minutes or so.
Right.
And tell us your impressions of CES. Okay, we heard your report from CES.
Yes.
But what did you find exciting? What did you find interesting apart from the fridge with the camera inside
it? The fridge is so cool.
Well, I'll talk about one product, which isn't exactly real. It's a concept. But I saw a working concept, which means it's kind of close.
Yeah.
Now, this is a bunch of words I'm going to string together, which aren't normally together. Gary, pull me up when you're when it's enough. A lamp-powered projector that runs Android.
Okay. Is there a gong? Can I hit the gong now? Okay. Got bingo.
Okay. By lamp, I presume you're talking Linux, Apache.
No, a light. So a lampshade.
Okay, but okay, when you said
cool.
But when you said lamp powered, you're not talking about a lamp stack. You're not talking about Linux, Apache, MySQL,
PHP. No, it's a lamp powered projector.
Okay.
So most projectors are powered by lamps. Let me just explain the product.
Yeah, go on.
Hang on. Is this the light bulb that has the technology that it can send?
I think you're talking about Sony stuff. Oh, no, that's Panasonic, yes.
How about I tell you?
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, I got the information here.
Yeah, I might as well, right? Yeah.
So this is a – unbelievable. This is a projector that plugs into a socket of a light to provide power, okay?
Oh, so it plugs into a light socket.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, cool.
As so in like a lampshade. Yeah, right?
Cool.
But the projector – on the inside, is already running an Android OS.
Okay.
Okay, so you plug it in, turn it on, all of a sudden Android's powering on, it's projecting to your Surface, whether it's your bench space, and it's...
Or your Microsoft Surface.
Nope. your Surface.
This sounds useful. You don't need the light when you've got a projector running. So
sure.
Cool. Yeah.
However, it also has a built-in camera. So what they were demonstrating was pulling QR codes underneath it. It would read the QR code and open up the recipe of that QR code. So it's actually showing...
Okay, let's stop right there, because about a year and a half, 2 years ago,
we
mentioned a news item, and I think you were in the studio at the time, Jeff, where you had...
Is this about the QR code?
No. This was a workbench area that you projected onto, and it had cameras that were sensing what you were doing.
So this is the HP Sprout.
Oh, I remember the Sprout.
Yes.
I can't remember whether it was HP that did this. I think this was proof of concept more than anything else. But it essentially turned your workbench in your kitchen, for instance, into a touchscreen. Is this similar to that? You had the projector projecting an image down onto the onto your workbench in your kitchen, and you could touch things on there, and the cameras would recognize what you were touching.
I think what he's talking about is it's projecting a recipe, for example, onto your bench.
Yeah, which this...
So that
went onto the radio, darling.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, talk into the microphone when you're talking.
So the way that it navigates and the way it's controlled is just through gestures.
So that's cool.
So in terms of the recipe display, it was on the screen. If you waved your hand over it, it goes to the next page. And it was actually, it worked really well. It was small, that it did look like a light globe. So the projector, everything inside it is tiny. And that was, for me, was really impressive.
Yeah, so it, does the whole thing actually sit in the light
in the socket?
Fitting?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So I thought it was just like a cable that ran into it.
It actually just screws into your normal
fantastic
socket, and that's it.
Okay, nice. Jason, give us one thing that really impressed you, because we are running out of time.
The other thing that I wanted to talk about, I don't think we talked about it last week, was Google's Project Tango.
Okay,
they announced that they're bringing Tango hardware to market with Lenovo this year. And then they gave us a demo of all of these cool things that you can do with a mobile phone that can actually sense depth and tell where it is within a room. They gave us a shooting gallery demo where they actually mounted the phone in a little bit of a Nerf gun, and we walked up to a blank wall where Tango had projected its own shooting gallery on screen, and we played that for a little while, and we were in a room with like three or four other demos going on, and all of a sudden we got to the end of the level, and they said, all right, prepare for the boss fight. And suddenly the shooting gallery on the wall was no longer part of the game, and you had to actually run around the room trying to kill the boss. And so there's people demoing, oh, you can use Project Tango to measure the length of this desk, and then someone just comes racing past with a gun going, I've got to kill this boss. Oh my God. It was absolutely insane and a lot of fun. So there's a lot of good things you can do with Project Tango. Don't know what the actual name of the hardware is going to be when it comes out, because Project Tango has been its development name.
Right.
We'll see it when we see it.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Okay, guys, we're running out of time. What color was Project Tango?
We didn't get to see the final hardware, but it was not tangerine.
Not tangerine?
Tango, yeah.
No, okay. Was it red? Not red?
No.
Okay, it's a shame because this is split ends. This is split ends. Okay. I see red. And welcome back to the Gadget Grill here on to RDJ FM 88.1 on the FM band, on the internet, www.radio2rdj.com. And we are coming to the close of our show.
There's a far more serene intro than the music that was just playing.
I know.
Oh, yes.
Just come back down. Here we go. Yes.
Okay, well, I don't have a useless gadget.
Oh,
so I thought we'd just say...
Jeff, go through the CES files.
No. I thought we'd just say goodnight and have a listen to Chick Corea and Bobby McFerrin. This is the guy who did Don't Worry, Be Happy, but this is what he really does well. Brilliant musician, Bobby McFerrin. And this is Thelonious Monk's Blue Monk. Chick Corea and Bobby McFerrin. I'm the Professor, Stumpy Steamboat Gaz.
I'm Jeff Quattromani.
I'm Jason Murray.
I'm Dee Willett.
Take care, Australia. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Ba 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 ba